Sebastian Setzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is, in my opinion, among the most intelligent and mature, if I may say so, members of the 9/11 research community. She produced a DVD, 9/11 Mysteries, widely regarded as among the best, if not the best, we have in relation to the events at the World Trade Center. And it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the show. Sophia, I'm so glad to have you on.
Jim, you're so complimentary. I just did a DVD for beginners. Please. Yeah.
I got to say, Sophia, it's just stunning to me how few there are out there in the 9/11 community that I regard as adults, and you're a refreshing example of one of those, a very small number.
Well, you didn't hear me go off on a tirade half an hour ago about somebody's spelling and grammar. Alzheimer's, Altimers.
No.
Altimers? Is that like an altimeter? You know? What is it? Is it a... I don't know. I'm not mature about that.
It must be some variation on Alzheimer's.
Well, some people call it old-timers, and they really pronounce it like that. And
old-timers, yeah.
Like old-timers, because old-timers get it, you know? But we're not only going to be old-timers getting this. And I have departed from 9/11 research into a whole new field that encompasses old-timers disease.
Well, you're going to have to tell us more about that. Plus, I understand that you're swimming, which I know you have done systematically for years and years, has been disrupted by some odd events out in Southern California. And we want to talk about that, too, of course.
Yes, it hasn't been really disrupted, but I'm aware that what's happening in the sky, this global spraying operation, has got to be affecting marine life. The oceans are cloudy. We don't have anything called visibility anymore. And I'll give you an example. This is about how people's perceptions and their references have changed, okay?
Yeah.
So today I swam. I just got out of the water. I did a long swim, and somebody else had just finished her swim, and she said to me, "The visibility is great today." And I said, "No, it isn't." And she said, "It is. It's great. You can see all the way to the bottom." I said, "Well, you know something, 20 years ago, you used to be able to make out details on the bottom, and we're only talking 15 feet deep. You could see ripples in the sand. You could see blades of grass. You could see stingrays hanging out, basking in the sunlight. You can't see any of that anymore. You cannot see the bottom." And I told her this, and she said, "Well, you can tell where the bottom is today." So this is how the perception has changed. If you can tell where the bottom of the ocean is, it's considered great visibility. And I want you to know that yesterday I swam, and there were half a dozen bat rays under me. Now, bat rays are 3 feet wide. They're like winged dragons. They're harmless. They have the basic ray shape, and they are gray in color. I could barely see them, and that tells me they can't see around them, if they even have eyes. I don't know how they sense exactly, but the animals in the ocean cannot navigate because there's so much obscurity, and I believe all this aluminum that they have been raining on us that is whitening our atmosphere with particulates, ionized particulates, this is falling into the ocean, and this is destroying the habitat of millions of creatures.
So there's several points you're making here that are rather important. One is that you've concluded that the chemtrails involve the use of aluminum ionized particulates that are affecting wide areas of the environment, including, of course, the ocean, and obscuring what used to be really clear, pristine water where visibility was excellent, causing it to be cloudy and obfuscating visibility. But also,
yes.
I'm inferring, Sophia, that you have opinions about what's going on here in terms of the why chemtrails are being deployed and these aluminum particulates are being dispersed in the atmosphere.
Well, sure. Fine. I have opinions. I wish I had, you know, more than just opinions. But I just want to make another point about sharks, the great white sharks. Typically, they migrate. They're warm-blooded, I learned. I didn't know this. Did you?
I think you asked me that once before. I'm not sure I did or did not, to tell the truth.
Sharks are one of the few fish in the ocean that's one of the few species of fish that's warm-blooded. Mm-hmm. And they have no body fat. So their fuel source is in their liver. It's in the form of a certain oil that they make from metabolizing food called squalene. And squalo is the Italian word for shark, so I'm assuming that this comes from the Latin for shark. So they carry the equivalent of the gasoline in our cars. They carry it in their livers, and they have no body fat. So they need to take in thousands of calories. They're enormous creatures. The great whites, you know, attain a length of 21 to 24 feet even, and they weigh as much as 2 tons. So the sharks have now, they migrate from Baja northward over the spring, and they pop in March and April. And we had a fatality here in San Diego County in April at one of our local beaches in very shallow water. And we've never had a fatal shark attack in North County, San Diego. There was one in La Jolla Cove in 1959, but there was no body found, and yet it is a documented report. The migration of the sharks has changed. I've learned from shark experts that they are hanging around Southern California. They're not returning to Northern California, to the colder waters, and they have begun to hunt for sport. Now, that's very unusual because everything in, you know, nature tends to be very efficient, and we now have sharks hunting, biting seals in half, and not eating them. That means, it could mean any number of things. But they have, I don't know when we'll go for break, but I'll keep talking. They have something in their faces called, faces and snouts called ampullae of Lorenzini, which are electromagnetically sensitive dots, you could call them. And the shark navigates electromagnetically with these sensors. And they are exquisitely sensitive creatures. They can tell the presence of blood in the ocean from a quarter mile away or something, I've heard. So the amount of electromagnetic stuff going on in our ionosphere and these particulates raining down into the ocean has got to be affecting the sharks who live because of their electromagnetic aptitude. Don't you think?
Well, I'm sure. Very interesting. Doing some research while we're talking, it turns out that the sharks, like the great white, they're called mildly homeothermic, meaning they're able to maintain their body temperature above the surrounding water temperature because they have an exchange mechanism that reduces the loss of body heat. It's not quite the same thing as true homeothermy as found as mammals and birds, in which heat is generated, maintained, and regulated by metabolic activity. But it's a very interesting property of sharks.
Yes.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Sophia. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is among the most intelligent and adult members of the 9/11 research community. She produced the DVD 9/11 Mysteries, which many regard as the best of the best. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Sophia, welcome again to the show.
Thank you, Jim. I think that we can kill it on the intelligent and adult.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just makes me cringe when I hear this.
Okay. I've just seen, you know, so much childish behavior out there, and I just don't find that with you, and to me it's refreshing. I mean, we have so many factions, you know, in the 9/11 movement, and I think we need to find a way to sort of organize the factions so it's clearly understood that there are groups within the 9/11 community that agree on a large number of issues, in particular in the repudiation and proofs that the government's account is false and indefensible, while disagreeing about various other issues. And the more I think about it, the more I think we need something like that, kind of an umbrella way of thinking of ourselves. And, you know, the history of politics reflects many situations in which the existence of factions was simply accepted as a part and parcel. And I think that insofar as the 9/11 research has a political dimension, we probably should adopt that model for ourselves.
Well, again, Jim, I see it as being a grassroots movement. When you look at a meadow of wildflowers, you'll see all different flowers scattered everywhere. It's not like the dandelions are all in one group and the daisies in another and the bluebells in another.
Yeah.
It's that they're all spread out. And however they identify themselves, whether they, now I'm speaking of the people,
yeah,
whether they're organized or not organized, this is grassroots and the awareness is starting to grow. And as the awareness grows, naturally, the points of interest are going to vary and new ones will be hatched and people will take umbrage that so-and-so is now discussing such-and-such. You know, I personally believe that something enormous happened at the World Trade Center beyond simple explosives.
Yeah.
And that would make me a space beam, you know, advocate. But I wouldn't call it space beams because, honestly, I don't know what space beams really mean.
Mm-hmm.
This is a term that has been flung at this category of thinking so as to cheapen it, I think.
Yes.
But anyway, to get back to the, and no, this is exactly my point. It's not to get back to. We are not allowed to discuss that kind of manner of destruction at the World Trade Center on 9/11 because it is truly enormous. It's electromagnetic weaponry. It is stealth weaponry. It's invisible. And this is the form of weaponry that they are now applying to all of us. And I truly believe, it hit me the other night, that if people start discussing that in connection with 9/11, the towers coming down on video, it's so obvious, it's so visible, it's so plain to see them crumble and then to connect that with the kind of means and method being deployed against all of us worldwide, which includes the spraying. It includes behavioral control. This would be too much. Their whole smoke screen would come down because we see electromagnetic weaponry in action at the World Trade Center. If you decide to entertain the idea that something beyond mere explosives were used.
Yes.
Right? And they cannot allow us publicly to make that connection. They cannot allow us to discuss the kind of weaponry being used against us in a widespread way. Today, there is a gigantic covert operation in play against human beings, which is electromagnetic in nature.
Yes.
And it's affecting everything. I believe it's affecting marine life. It's very possible that the fires in Northern California were generated by lightning strikes, which were generated by HARP. The air is conditioned. It's now a conductive plasma. It's no longer neutral, thanks to the amount of particulate, the saturation that it holds, that it is. It is saturated now with this stuff. And that is was the basis for which this engineered crisis, this disaster, forest fires. You know, somebody just told me that he was fighting fires in Northern California himself, struggling with the hoses, and the firefighters were sitting there on their butts watching him. What? They did nothing.
Why in God's name was that happening?
Because he told me they are instructed to let it burn. Let it burn. They're not meant to fight.
Well, I've heard of there are occasions when forest fires and so forth are allowed to burn themselves out.
Well, that's right. That's when you meet it on the other side with a fire. You start a fire and the two fires meet. I forget what it's called. But anyway, that's one method of fire control. But in this case, this guy was not able single-handedly to put out a fire. He told me it resulted in $2 million worth of damage, and the firefighters sat around and watched him, and then they went home. They left him by himself. So none of that makes any sense. Arnold Schwarzenegger had just told the state of California that the fire season was normally 3 months, but now, guess what? Now it's all year. Now our fire seasons are year-long, which allows them to engineer more disasters, which is state-sponsored weather terrorism for control of our lives. And this is all possible because of the electromagnetic preparation they have done in the ionosphere and the atmosphere. Now all they have to do is throw the switch. The air is conductive. We are conductive. These particles are in us. The sharks are sensing them. Maybe that's why they're not going back to Northern California, because of the HARP that was, set off there, the HARP activity. I have no idea. And I was talking to a shark researcher recently, and he said it would be very interesting to start looking at the way in which animals are affected by government experimentation. And you know what? It occurred to me, maybe then the population will care, because it's now affecting a marine creature. And they have this love for the oceans, but they don't have it for humanity itself. You know, save the dolphins, but don't save the Iraqis.
Placing greater value, yes. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, Sophia. We'll be right back.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly. Blackbird fly. The line of a dark black night.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, we got a bit of a buzz here, let's hope it'll disappear, is Sophia, who's produced one of the best, if not the best, DVDs in 9/11 history. 9/11 Mysteries. Sophia, it's just a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Yes, and as I said, I am now understanding that 9/11 was a covert operation, and we have a continual covert operation that is affecting all life forms right now, which is this engineering of the atmosphere and ionosphere through electromagnetic means. and we were talking about sharks earlier and the marine life and the planet, and I ended with a bit of a rant. Now you can see that, you know, I'm not as even and contained as people think. But yes, we have issues here with every life form on this planet. And how do you get people interested? They're clearly not interested in other people. They're barely aware of themselves being affected by this.
And, you know, the people who are making decisions about things like this have so little education or knowledge about evolution and ecology. I'll never forget a conversation I had with Doug Rocky, who has had great experience in the military using many kinds of weapons. He was a B-52 bomber pilot in Vietnam, for example, and he was talking about the use of depleted uranium weapons in Iraq. And I was explaining that, of course, as you know well, it's causing contamination in vast areas of that country. It's being blown around the Middle East. It can spread worldwide eventually. It's radioactive and has a half-life of 4.5 billion years, which is equal to the scientific estimate of the age of the Earth. So it's no telling. You know, there are massive genetic defects that are showing up now in offspring being born in Iraq. And its consequences are absolutely terrible and potentially of very long lasting effect. So I'm terribly, terribly troubled by this. And I said to him, Doug, how can you use a weapon like this when it has such devastating consequences? And he said, because it's effective, because it's the best weapon, meaning when you fire one of these depleted uranium weapons shells, because they're so dense, they go right through the armor plating of the heaviest tanks and destroy them. But, you know, to me, that's obviously, it's no excuse to use a weapon that's inhumane to its core.
But, Jim, it's all deliberate. The destruction, the byproducts of depleted uranium are the whole point of this, that you're blowing something lethal that's going to interfere with the genome of all living things, that's going to alter the viability of life in that's the war. The war isn't the people shooting and knocking each other down. That's just the theater. But the real war is the elimination of life and then ultimately the control of whatever is left. The engineered control.
And when you mention the elimination of life, you really mean reducing the population of human beings on the planet Earth.
Yes, but the elimination of nature. You see, nature is a pain in the butt because it's variable, and you never know what it's going to do. It's going to create this strain or that one, and they don't want this. They want engineered forms that they can control. They don't need bees. They don't need butterflies. They don't need songbirds. They don't need any of this. Why is Bill Gates and his friends at Syngenta and the Rockefellers, why are they making a seed vault in the Arctic to house 4.5 million seed varieties for the future of the Earth? What do they know about the future of the Earth that we don't know? Why are they doing this? Because they want the basis from which to create growing life forms. They don't want the wind and the butterflies and the bees to be
this is fascinating. The fact of the matter is they don't know enough to know how to do it right. I mean, nature is such a complicated causal process in terms of evolution, etc., that for them to think that they could take current knowledge, for example, and be able to anticipate the course of events if they were to try to reconstruct what nature has done over countless millennia is a guaranteed recipe for disaster, Sophia.
Well, you're still thinking in a very old-fashioned way. They're not trying to redo nature. They're trying to do something else. They're trying to eliminate nature. They want to sidestep it altogether.
But of course, that's impossible. I mean, we're talking about all the laws that hold the world together, all the laws of physics, chemistry, biology, psychology. You can't redo those. Those are not changeable. They aren't variable.
Well, those can be damaged badly, and then you have chaos that ensues, and they benefit from chaos. Chaos actually helps their program along. Their program is simply to take out a few things from the chaos and then control those things.
But you see, the systems they're talking about are so complicated that they don't understand that they can even be chaotic in the technical sense, meaning that the least change in one part of the system can have enormous consequences for the system as a whole. I mean, they don't understand the science. They don't understand the philosophy. They're creating a recipe for disaster. I mean, they may think they're going to make a better world. What they're actually doing, I would predict, is destroying it.
That's the point. That's it. They're not trying to make a better world. They're trying to take over the world.
No. I mean destroy all life, including their own, Sophia. I'm not just talking about, you know, they think they can manage these things. They can't manage these things. I mean, you know, once you get all that depleted uranium out there, who's to know who it's going to affect? It's been measured in London, for example, in other European countries. It's spreading to the North Africa. It's going to make its way into India and Pakistan without any doubt. It's a calamity. And you take bees out. Bees are responsible for pollination in relation to many types of foods we like tremendously, like different kinds of nuts and apples and things like that. I mean, these are going to just, if you don't have bees, you're not going to have those things. Those kinds of food are just going to disappear. I've heard the estimate that there have been in the past something like 139 different kinds of corn. I don't know if you were mentioning this to me. And that Monsanto is seeking to reduce it to something like 4. Well, this is absurd. This is quite absurd and an awful situation to contemplate.
Well, that's right. But that's what they're trying to do is bring it all down, put it through the narrowest little pipette, and put their little drops of creation on the earth, and that will be it. That will be life. It'll be all nano-engineered. Instead of cell biology, we're looking forward to a future of nano physiology, nano-engineering, nanobiology. This is the whole new horizon.
Well, the problem is, unless you're truly omniscient, you can't anticipate with sufficient reliability the consequences. Once you disrupt a single level in the food chain, you have destined for extinction all species at higher levels on the food chain. And
that's
it appears to me that this is taking place in the world today.
That's exactly it. You're seeing it, Jim. You're seeing what they're doing.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Sophia. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Today, we're now concluding a conversation with Sophia, who is the producer of 9/11 Mysteries, one of the best, if not the best, DVDs in the history of the 9/11 truth movement. Sophia, you're really sketching a very gloomy picture here of the where we are, and I'm sorry to say I know no reason to argue against what you're having to say.
That's right. It sounds gloomy, but Jim, you know, I do believe that we have some utilities at our disposal that are the equivalent of this electromagnetic stuff, which is the magical consciousness abilities that human beings have that the mystics have written about. And you know, occasionally a mother picks her VW up off her trapped child, this kind of thing. And we're going to have to, I don't know how to evoke this in ourselves, but this is our only way out. On the physical level, we can't investigate and scold them and tell them to stop and tell them to bring the bees back because we'd rather have pollination going on naturally than the way they want to do it. It's not going to work. They have been planning this. There's something very, very perverse in this plan, and it doesn't originate from people like you and me and our, you know, friends, and no matter whether they're 9/11 people in agreement with us or not. This is something completely different. This is a different kind of orientation to and around and about this planet. I don't know what it is, but there are things in store for us, I believe, that we're going to be absolutely shocked by that we have no knowledge of. And it stuns me that the 9/11 movement will not discuss effects and possibilities in an open way, in a theoretical way.
Yeah.
That absolutely could have been involved. Because you know what? Our knowledge, the lay person's knowledge, even the knowledge of people in science labs in various universities, this is all plebeian. It's not, it's not advanced.
There's a bizarre kind of premature closure that's taken place in the 9/11 community, as though they knew enough and didn't want to know anymore and were even afraid to discuss it. I mean, the turning 9/11 blogger into a closed shop for 9/11 orthodoxy is an absurdity.
That's right. Now,
not only was I given the boot just for having a blog there in which I discussed my reasons why I thought Steve Jones' work was not all on the be-all, but even someone as moderate as Kevin Barrett has been booted off a blogger. I say, if you're taking people like me and Kevin off a blogger, I can't see that it has much purpose other than to, you know, be an exchange of platitudes among the true believers in certain views that may not be ultimately justified.
Jim, it is very possible that they allow the controlled demolition explosive theory of 9/11 to come out. And they will blame it on the current administration, who are on their way out in a few months, and they will never allow a bigger discussion of what happened at the Twin Towers. And let's throw in Building 7, because it is too directly revealing of what they are doing and what they continue to do. So this controlled demolition is old-fashioned. We had bombs back in the 40s, you know? There are other things. They started with whatever is weapons, sticks and stones, then we went to knives and swords, and then we had gunpowder, and then we had bombs, and then we had chemical weapons, and then we had nuclear fission. And now we have electromagnetic, stealth weaponry, biological weaponry. All of this is invisible, and they don't want us to be talking about what's invisible.
Well, I sure agree with your fundamental point, which is that, you know, it's like the CIA. What they fear most is not the exposure of an operation, but the methods, the means they use when they conduct their business. It's like the military here. What they don't want revealed were the means or the methods that were used to bring about the destruction of the Twin Towers, especially.
Right. I mean, I think Stephen Jones' work is fine, but are we not allowed to talk about anything else? Can't we suppose? Can't we theorize? Can't we do the what if? Do you know that what if is it's the basis on which inventions are made?
The four stages of scientific inquiry, puzzlement, speculation, adaptation, explanation. Speculation is the crucial stage. If you can't get all different alternative hypotheses out there articulated for discussion, you may never figure out what's the true, because you prematurely fixate on some small number and exclude all the rest, which may include the true hypothesis.
Right. Now, I want to point out that we've discovered that there's a whole body of incorrect information that is being peddled by so-called scientific sources about contrails. There is this term, persistent jet contrails, which is, it doesn't exist. It's an impossibility. A contrail is like your breath on a winter day. It forms, it disappears. You breathe out more, it forms, it disappears. Your breath could not expand and make cloudy masses around you as you walked. That's unheard of. So the contrail expanding into this artificial polymer cloud cover with metal particulate in it. This is not a contrail. And yet there's this enormous body of science out there that says that under certain very humid conditions, contrails can spread. It's total rubbish.
This is an attempt to make it appear as though the contrails are actually harmless.
Yes.
And easily explained, right? You know, it's typical of the disinformation operations that their attempt isn't actually to persuade you of the truth or falsity of one position or another. In the case of 9/11, not trying to convince you of the truth of the government's position, for example, but trying to create enough uncertainty that everything is believable and nothing is knowable. That's why the scientific grounding of our reasoning in relation to our inquiries is so absolutely crucial.
That's a very good point that you just made, that everything is believable but nothing is knowable. That's very interesting. Isn't that what you just said?
Yes, it is. I didn't originate it. Martin Schultz, who published a book entitled History Will Not Absolve Us, is a psychiatrist who resides in the Boston area, and he made that observation in relation to disinformation relative to JFK. But it's an astute observation and absolutely crucial to understanding disinformation.
Well, amazingly, I have that book right here, History Will Not Absolve Us, so that's going to be the next thing
wonderful.
I read. Yes, can you believe it?
That's terrific.
I pulled it out. Yeah, no, it is important that we open our minds, that we think outside the box. We cannot just be in the box and believe what we're being told, even though it can be found on this website or that website, and these are all authority websites. We have to become our own authority. We have to do our own work to the best that we can, the best of our abilities, and share the ideas in a very open way.
Yeah.
You know what? I've come to believe that almost anything is possible, except those things that absolutely defy the laws of physics, like and nature, like your contrails cannot form, like your breath cannot expand. Contrails cannot form and last all day long. Those are not contrails.
Yeah.
Can be called contrails.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. In my philosophical work, I've distinguished three different types of possibility and impossibility. The logical impossibilities, you know, you can't have someone who's both literally both a bachelor and married, insofar as bachelor implies being unmarried. You can't have someone who's a freshman but not a student. You can't have a Volkswagen that isn't a car. These are all things that are, you know, necessarily true by definition. So that's one class. But the more important class to which you're alluding really are the laws of nature, which can't be violated and can't be changed. And we're talking about laws of physics, chemistry, biology, and so forth. And these are profoundly important to understanding the way the world operates, because this is the kind of glue that holds the world together. The third are the historical impossibilities, which have to do with not being able to undo history insofar as it has occurred up to a certain time T. But there you have to, of course, figure out, as you do indeed in terms of logical and physical impossibilities, what the actual history of the world has been up until that time. But it's like to say today, you couldn't be the first person to climb Mount Everest today because Sir Edmund Hillary did it a long time ago.
Right.
So, Sophia, I want to thank you for coming on. I look forward to having you back, and I really appreciate you taking the time to join me.
Well, thank you, and you just delivered a most wonderful conclusion to everything that we discussed, so thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate your being here, and keep up the good work, okay?
Yes.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. I'll be right back after this break.